I am the best wrestler in the world. I've been the best ever since day one when I walked into this company, and I've been vilified and hated since that day because Paul Heyman saw something in me that nobody else wanted to admit. I've grabbed so many of Vincent K. McMahon's imaginary brass rings that it's finally dawned on me that they're just that. They're completely imaginary. The only thing that's real is me, and the fact that day in and day out, for almost 6 years, I have proved to everybody in the world that I am the best on this microphone, in that ring, even at commentary. Nobody can touch me.
Here with a brand new episode of CMG's Wrestling Reviews, right here on the Absolution Network. This is episode 32, and on this episode, well, it's January, which means there's only one pay-per-view we can possibly review, right? And if we're gonna review this pay-per-view, we gotta do this right.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the main event. Let's get ready to rumble!
Y'all ready for this? Aw, yeah, it's the Royal Rumble all month here on CMG's Wrestling Reviews. And on here, episode 32... we start off with the Rumble that Vince McMahon told Austin that he had no chance in hell of winning. That's right. This episode, we review Royal Rumble 1999. Oh, man. For that matter, this entire month I've been looking forward to. I've been going patiently over, oh, God, what Rumbles to cover. And there's so many infamous Royal Rumbles, you know, here's... over 1989 to DM, I think we're getting close to 30. Or I think it's 26, 27, 28. I think we are getting close to like the 30th anniversary of the Royal Rumble. And if not this year, then I can't remember which Rumble is which. 1999 was the 12th, so 2009 was the 22nd. So yeah, we're just past the 25th, I think. 27th. I'm not gonna do math in my head in the middle of a podcast. Anyways, there's so many Royal Rumbles. We have Shawn Michaels, Wild Rumble, where he did number one to... where he started one and won it. And do Chris Benoit's from one to where he won it. You can do the very first one, which Hacksaw Jim Duggan won. You can do the two that Hogan won early on. You can do the one where Flair won. That's where he got his moniker as the 60-Minute Man. Woo! Just so many. Austin, you know, I mean, we're covering one that Austin's in, but... I could say the past 2 years were awesome. So many I could have chosen from. And we have five spots. So with that being said, I'm going to tell you right now, this is the earliest Royal Rumble we will be covering this month, is 1999. Next year, I'll have to make a note to make sure that, you know, I'll do the early ones next year. It's just like there's so many I had to choose, and overall, I decided to choose my personal favorite Rumbles, with the exception of this one. This one, I wanted to start off with one that Austin had done in particular to me, or one or had been a part of majorly, being that it was part of the Attitude Era. In particular, I decided to choose 1999 because I hadn't seen it yet. The other four that I will be covering are particular favorite Rumbles of mine, because I had seen them in some form or another. I don't know how I saw 2000. Of course, 2000 will have a special guest, but we'll get to that at the end of the podcast. Anyways, the Rumble is just so much fun. I really think that the Royal Rumble can vie for the spot of the second best pay-per-view that WWE has. I know a lot of people put SummerSlam in that spot. But I think Royal Rumble edges it out, just because I think the Royal Rumble is more engaging to people outside of being, who are not wrestling fans, I should say. You know, where everybody comes to WrestleMania and there's a pageantry and a superstarness to it, SummerSlam is more heavyweight fight-ish. And it has its own stars, too, and there's a celebration with SummerSlam, mind you, of being, because I guess WWE does consider it the second big pay-per-view. But at the same point in time, like I said, Royal Rumble, anybody can watch Royal Rumble, and for that matter, the Royal Rumble match, and really get what's happening, because it's very simple. You toss the opponents over the rope, and if both feet hit the floor, they're eliminated. There's drama, there's tension that is created through it. It's just fun. And so, yeah, I really think the Royal Rumble is one of the perfect pay-per-views to, you know, show people, to get them into wrestling, or to get them to understand why we enjoy wrestling, for that matter. Like I said, it was very hard to pick which Rumbles to cover this month. But we're going to have fun this month. We're going to Rumble, Young Man Rumble, because it's Royal Rumble all month. Now, before we get into the review proper, two things. One, I've struggled to say it. I may say it next episode more, because I don't know where to put it, but I just want to say RIP to Stuart Scott. God rest your soul, wherever you may be. Well, we know where you are. We know you're up there. God rest your soul, young man. Just want to say that, tell you when I'm recording this, that have, for those who don't know, ESPN personality Stuart Scott passed away early this morning as of the time of this recording. And I struggle where to put this in the podcast, because on one hand, it doesn't have much to do with wrestling, but at the same point in time, I think anybody who is a wrestling fan, in particular those who grew up with the Attitude Era, we grew up watching SportsCenter, and we grew up watching Stuart Scott on SportsCenter. So I felt it was, for the large portion of the audience that this is dedicated to, I think we know who Stuart Scott is, and I think he's a very important personality. It would be like a major voice actor, or a major actor, you know, would be like Robin Williams. Maybe not quite as big as Robin Williams dying, and I say that with all due respect to Stuart Scott, but at the same point in time, it's a major personality of our childhood and our growing up, as SportsCenter was, because we are sports fans. I know I'm a sports fan. So I just want to say, to rest in peace, Stuart Scott. Second, we actually do have a comment. Because like I said, guys, if you send comments in, I will read them. And the comment came from LPS Good. I hope I said that right. LPS, you know, you probably have heard him on the WrestleCast as well. He sent comments there. So he decided to send me a comment. And if, you know, internet would work, I could get to it, because it sent me to the wrong page. But LPH is good. Says he says, "Hey, I wish you a happy new year and hope that the Royal Rumble 1999 will be the best review in the world." Well, see, that's kind of hard to do, because every review I do is the best review in the world, because I'm CM Jew, the best Jew in the world. So to sit there and say that this review is going to be the best review in the world is kind of, you know, not true, because every review I do is the best review in the world. So, you're right, it will be, but at the same time, every review is the best review in the world. Thank you, LPH is good. Please keep sending more comments, and for all of you who are listening, please send comments. I try to record these on the weekend, so if you send them during the week, even if it's a PEV on a past episode, I will read them. Please send those comments. So with that, I think it's time to get into the review proper. I've wasted enough time as it is. So, ladies and gentlemen, Royal Rumble 1999, featuring the tagline of No Chance in Hell, with a theme song of No Chance in Hell by the Chris Warren Band. You know, the same people who did D-Generation X's Break It Down theme. This took place on January 24th, 1999, to an attendance of 14,816 at the Arrowhead Pond in Anaheim, California. Ladies and gentlemen, let's get into Royal Rumble 1999. No chance, so that's what you got. Up against a machine too strong. Again, this is a perfect example of why they need to put Sunday Night Heat, I think, on the network. Because it'd be great to see some of these matches, you know. Again, like I said, this is a Rumble I had not seen. Of course, I've heard all about it, and I've seen lots of clips from a lot of the different matches. In particular, the Rock and Mankind match, and, of course, the Rumble match itself. At the same point in time, it's one of those things to where, you know, again, I came in late 99, but even still, when I was watching wrestling, Sunday Night Heat was a big sort of, you know, Sunday Night Heat was the pay-per-view pre-show that we have now. And the fact that you would have these Sunday Night Heat matches that would, you know, get people excited. And, you know, there were small little matches that got people hyped for the pay-per-view. Just like, you know, the pre-show matches do now for WWE pay-per-views. So it would be nice if I could watch some of these matches. Now, beyond the Heat match, we actually had a dark match before everything. And once again, we have this sort of something happening in the dark match. Remember how I talked about how D'Lo Brown was in both those Armageddon pay-per-views I talked about, the Sunday Night Heat match? Well, once again, we have a connection to Armageddon 2002. In this sense, it's Jeff Hardy who makes the connection, as he was in the Heat match there, and now he's in a dark match here, as Christian faced Jeff Hardy and Christian defeated Jeff Hardy in a singles dark match. So I wish I could see that. Of course, that being a dark match, of course we didn't see it because it's a dark match for the crowd. Now we have two Sunday Night Heat matches. One was Bob Holly and Scorpio, you know, aka Too Cold Scorpio, versus Too Much, the team, you know, aka the team that would later be known as Too Cool, of, you know, Scotty Taylor and Brian Christopher, aka Scotty Too Hottie and Brian Christopher. I can never remember his Too Cool name. You know, it would help if I would, you know, look it up and, you know, Grandmaster Sexay. Yeah, I know. I should remember that, but, you know, everybody remembers Scotty Too Hotty. Nobody remembers Grandmaster Sexay. Anyways, Bob Holly and Scorpio defeat Too Much in the match. Doesn't tell me how. And then the third one was Mankind. Of course, this was part of the storyline. They would bring this up during the pay-per-view. They, you know, the corporation had Mankind face Babel in a warm-up match, which I believe he won because of disqualification. And, you know, they had Mabel do splashes on Mankind's back to warm him up for The Rock, basically. So those are the Sunday Night Heat matches. We start off proper with, "Oh, you didn't know? Da-na-na-na. Well, you better call somebody." As it's the Road Dogg, Jesse James, the current WWF Hardcore Champion, versus the Corporation Bodyguard, the Big Boss Man. And, or Hitman, I think they put it, basically. Now, the Hardcore title is not on the line. This is just a straight singles match. But they by the way, your commentary team is not Jim Ross and the King. It's Michael Cole and Jerry the King Lawler. And by the way, they are pretty good throughout this entire pay-per-view. But they one thing they constantly bring up is, you know, why the Hardcore title isn't up for grab. Michael Cole, of course, being the face, saying pretty much because, you know, they to make it easier for the Boss Man. Anyways, you know what? This was a really good opening match. Not many short matches on this pay-per-view. Just two in the middle. But most of the matches went over 10 minutes. And you know what? They're good. They're fast pace. I mean, maybe it's one criticism I do have. I don't know if it's a criticism or a compliment to it. Is that so much goes on in these matches that all the matches felt longer than they did. Like, the first two here felt like they were 20-minute matches. The two matches in the middle, which were under 10 minutes, felt like they were 10 minutes. Even though they were around 5 minutes. The Brock Mankind match felt like it went on forever. But not in that bad way. Just, they're telling such a great story, and I really think that's what it is. These guys are telling a great story, and so much is going on that if you get immersed in it and you embrace it and you get lost in the match, and it feels longer than it really is. So our first match, like I said, Big Boss Man versus the Road Dogg. Good match, you know, back and forth. For, you know, Boss Man classic, you know, dominates in the middle of the match. Road Dogg tries to come back, does his shake, rattle, and roll. If there's one criticism, is I don't think they set up the Boss Man slam properly, because it kind of just comes out of nowhere, but not in that, you know, like, oh my god, it came out of nowhere. It was that, like, there just didn't seem any setup for, you know, the finish to happen. You know, for some of these, you know, for some of these matches, that is a criticism I have. It's because some of these matches do set up the finish, and it does it perfect. That's why I actually think that the Billy Gunn match here is better than the Road Dogg match, as good as Road Dogg was in this match. Road Dogg, I think, was much better in the Rumble match than he was in his own single match. And, by the way, speaking of Billy Gunn, let's move on to our next match. We have the WWF Intercontinental Champion Ken Shamrock versus Billy Gunn for the WWF Intercontinental Championship. This is a great back-and-forth contest. You know, for all the talk about Billy Gunn himself, he didn't Billy Gunn himself at all here, as I thought he did a great job telling the story. He had no botches or no big ones, I could say, like he did with Chris Benoit last episode of CM Juice, where we reviewed it was 2000, when we did Armageddon 2000. He had that big botch in his match with Chris Benoit, by the way, for the Intercontinental Championship. But, no, total great story. Again, Ken Shamrock, I thought, does great ring psychology and going for the leg. And Billy Gunn did a great job of selling that leg being injured. And, of course, he would continue to sell that in the Rumble himself. Or itself, mind you. And ultimately, again, setting up that finish and, you know, setting up him coming off the top rope to try to, you know, and re-injuring that ankle even further and, you know, really selling it. And then Shamrock locking on the ankle locks submission to get the win. They really built it up and they set up the finish and it worked perfectly. And you know what? It's a really good match overall. I'm actually really surprised with really how good it was. It's not like this 5-star match, but it was definitely at least a 3.5, if not a 4-star match. Definitely one of the better matches of the night. Our next match is X-Pac versus Gangrel for the WWF European Championship, as X-Pac is the WWF European Champion. It was great to see Gangrel. It was great to hear his theme, because I think everybody loves his theme and loves his entrance, though he didn't do the entrance here proper because, of course, they didn't have that stage like they do on Raw. These were the old pay-per-view sets, mind you. You know what? This was a really fast-paced match. And again, this is a great example. This and the next match are both... Well, this match is around 6 minutes. The next match is around 5 minutes. But both these matches felt like they were over 10 minutes because so much was going on that you got lost in it. And it was so fast-paced and, you know, so much was going on. You know, and it was back and forth this entire match. You know, it was a good middle-of-the-card match. It wasn't bad. It wasn't good. It was just that good middle-of-the-card match that, you know, keeps the momentum of the pay-per-view going. And I'll say the same thing about the next match as well. And again, I think also the next match, which is the WWF Women's Champion Sable versus Luna Vachon for the WWF Women's Championship in a strap match with Shane McMahon at ringside. Mind you, there's just so much storyline going on in that match. Again, while it also keeps the momentum, the match keeps the momentum going, it's also telling a lot of story, so that's also why it felt longer than it was. Because, of course, you had Shane McMahon coming out, and you know, then Luna Vachon coming out and saying, you know, they had attacked Sable earlier in the night, that, you know, she hurt her back and could not compete, so she needs to come here and submit the title. Of course, Sable doesn't, so the strap match goes on. Then, of course, you had Sable's stalker, who would later on be revealed to be Tori, T-O-R-I, not Tori Wilson, but Tori, T-O-R-I. Of course, not here, but that would be revealed later down the road. So you had all that story going on to that match. Now, I just want to say this. Even as short of a strap match as it was, I thought both divas did a great job doing a strap match. Which, again, I point to Vince. You can have your women do these type of matches. You can have them do more physical matches. We want to see the women do physical matches. In fact, that is why I think we accepted bikini contests and the beauty contests more, because we wanted to see those beauties and bikini contests and all of that. We also knew that they could wrestle. So, well, yeah, we may have been oogling them, but we were oogling them with respect. It's the respect that made them sexy. But that's a story for a different day. In fact, that's a story we'll probably get into next episode of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. But again, a very decent man. Not good, not bad. Middle of the card match. It just kept the momentum rolling. By the way, X-Pac defeats Gangrel for the championship. He would defeat him. And going up my notes, you think I'd have this here. He'd hit him with an X Factor. The Sable, the Khan match, kind of ended in a similar way to, you know, Eddie, JBL, would end. Just the reverse. If you remember, because I believe, I'd have to look it back up, but I believe, like, JBL was carrying Eddie around and they both were hitting the same corners. Same thing here. Luna, like, puts Sable on her back and she hits the corner and Sable does. And, they're going for the fourth corner. Sable's trying to stop him. Shane tries to get involved. Unifkon, like, knocks Sable out. As she goes just the corner, Tori comes out, the unknown stalker at the time, hits Unifkon in the head, and Sable uses that to then touch the four corner, which the ref sees, and declares her the winner. So, again, a lot of storytelling, as you can see, being done in that match. Which is, again, why it feels longer. But, again, I like storytelling. I'd rather have a match feel long because it has so much story to tell than to feel long because it's so boring and it's like, I don't care. It's like, is it over yet? Is it over yet? And it felt longer because of that. But that, let's move on to our next match. A match I have not fully seen. A match I have seen, but not fully seen. And what I mean by that is, like I said, I've not seen this pay-per-view, so I've not seen this match, but I've seen so many clips from this match because of botches and things like that, and because I've actually seen this match, in a way, in its entirety through, I'm trying to look it up, the name of the, Beyond the Mat, the documentary, which heavily featured this match, because, again, at a point where they talked heavily about with Mankind. The next match is The Rock versus the WWF champion Mankind in an I Quit match for the WWF championship. This was a lot of storytelling. This was a brutal match. I can see why. I think this is the match that kind of showcased it going a bit. It's interesting to say this is the match that went too far, considering all the matches that had so much blood and everything, gore. But there was just a lot of brutality in this match. And I think for Mankind, this was going a bit far. And mind you, if you saw Beyond the Mat, you could see the brutality that happened. That being said, it is a very... I don't know if entertaining is the right word, but it's a very engaging match. I think one thing that makes it engaging was the package video that they did before the match that set up everything that had been happening. And of course, you know, you had that great promo where The Rock saying, you know, I'll promise that the corporation was like, nope, no title shot for you, Rock. Well, I won't quit until you got it, huh? You got your match. And an I Quit match. A match I can never lose because I will never say I quit. It's a great promo package and it's a great promo on Raw. I really need to look it up. But yeah, I think that really set up the match. And I think there are a lot of memorable spots in this match, mind you, that really make the match engaging. Again, I don't want to sit here and say it's entertaining because it's very brutal. And seeing The Rock continuously pound Mankind in the head with chair shot after chair shot after chair shot. I believe it was, 14 chair shots? I'm trying to look up I can't remember how many chair shots. I think it's like around, he hit him in the head 14 times with a chair. It's very brutal. So to sit there and say it's entertaining, in all actuality, I think this has to be said for any hardcore match like that, is that we say entertaining, but at the same point in time, it's not entertaining because we enjoy seeing a person get their head smashed in. It's more engaging in its entertainment. It's engaging because we feel the emotion. We do feel how it hurts. We may not be technically able to feel how it hurts, but the way the wrestlers sell things and everything, you can feel the pain. And there's something engaging that makes you cheer for a person when you see them continuously get up from such a brutal beatdown. You know, I talked about when we did the review for King of the Ring 1998, and we talked about the Hell in a Cell between Taker and Mankind. You know, it's that very same thing. That's a brutal. I understand where TWK was coming from in the sense that it was just very dangerous, but at the same point in time, they put their bodies on the line, and it's like, oh my God, how does he get up from that? And you can feel the emotion, you can feel the pride, you can feel everything coming from those wrestlers, and the same thing here. By the way, again, great selling of each of their characters. Whenever they had a mic, you know, Mankind telling Rock to go to hell. Of course, Rock, whenever he got the mic, he would talk for like a minute before he put it, like, oh, the Rock promised that your candy ass would say I quit because I'm the people champion, the millions and millions of fans want me to, you say I quit, so do you quit? Go to hell, Rock. Hit him with the mic. It's like, that's Rocky. It is very interesting to finally see where that bot spot of the table comes from. Because I've seen that clip of the Rock attempting to rock bottom Mankind through the Spanish announce table, but then it giving millions of times. And, yeah, it's very interesting. I think there's also one where he tries to do the Triple H and it happens. So I may be mixing it up, those two. But again, still, it's very interesting to finally see where that comes from. The electrical box spot was very interesting. I did not know where that was going to go for a moment. I'm like, well, who's going to fall? You know they're setting up a fall. But who's it going to fall? It's more than likely to be Mankind, but could it possibly be Rock? And, of course, it was Mankind. The end of the match is very hard to watch, I think. Because, again, it is those chair shots. At the same point in time, the finish of the match... You know what, I think, again, because we know what happens, and I've seen what happened, so I knew it was coming. I knew the storyline aspect of it was coming. I think it was very shocking. I think why it's also very shocking is because I think to anybody who's watching it, it seemed very obvious that something was up. I don't even think you need to know that Mankind was this person who would never say, I quit. Because just the way it sounds off the mic, you could tell, I think everybody could tell something was up. And you could tell something, the crowd knew that. And then it felt it. And of course, for those who don't know the storyline, it gets revealed the next night that actually at that point when he hits him in the back of the head, Mankind was unconscious. And that what the crowd heard was not from the mic, but a sound clip played by Shane McMahon at the time from earlier in the evening. Mankind cuts a promo where he says, I will not say, I quit, I quit, I quit. And they had basically cut that and put that there when he asked them, do you quit? And I think as a fan you could tell something was up because it didn't sound right. But again, that goes back to the storytelling, which I thought they did a great job of doing. And last but not least, this brings us to the Royal Rumble match itself. Now, there's a couple of prelims to go. Again, the whole thing is that Steve Austin is put in number one spot by Vince McMahon, who doesn't want him to go to WrestleMania to wrestle for the championship. To counter this, now Vince says he's going to enter number 30 to make damn sure. Shawn Michaels puts Vince McMahon in this number two spot. And mind you, there's a thing going here that, you know, Austin, when he lost the title, finally gets fired, eventually gets brought back by Shane, under the guise that if he touches Mr. McMahon, he's fired, unless they're in an actual match together. Also, this Rumble marked the first time a woman is in the Rumble, as Chyna would have entered at the number 30 spot, as she won the Corporation versus D-Generation X Mini Rumble. I believe it was that past Monday. And so she would be the first woman ever in the Royal Rumble. And like I said, Vince McMahon was really dedicated to making sure that Austin did not go win the Rumble and go to the main event of WrestleMania. So he also had, I think it was a $10,000 bounty on Stone Cold's head for any wrestler who eliminates Stone Cold Steve Austin. So, there's so many storylines and so many things to go over. Let's get started. First off, we'll start off with the first two competitors. They start off the match, and it's like... And this Austin just starts whipping his ass. And again, of course, Austin, like, I'm going to throw you out. Nope, I'm not throwing you out yet. Nope, I'm having my fun. Sharpness. The first competitor to actually come in, I would actually, I find interesting, from the oddities, is Goga, or Goldga. I hope I'm saying that right. Yeah, I found it interesting as Goga was is oh, let me look it up. It's Earthquake. It's John Tenna, for those who don't know. This was him returning to the WWF. He had returned, I believe, in 1998 as part of the. I never knew about this team, so this is something I'll probably have to learn more about, because apparently, I believe it's what, Kurgan? Kurgan. I never knew about the Oddities. Again, remember, this is a time where I had not seen Raw or these shows. Mind you, I've seen Kurgan, who's part of the Oddities, as I saw him as part of the Truth Commission again when we reviewed Survivor Series 97. Of course, he's also in the... By the way, it's very funny to see him with that hat in the Rumble, mind you. I did not know that, you know, Tenna returned and was Golga. He comes in, Austin eliminates him in 15 seconds. You also have Goldberg being eliminated by Edge eventually in 7 seconds with his funny little entrance. And, of course, I do like the storyline between McMahon and Austin. I think they did a great job of really setting up some tension and really playing off each character's strengths. I think having Vince McMahon go under the bottom rope, Austin following him and leading him to an ambush in a bathroom was really well done, and really a good part, presenting the strength of Mr. McMahon's character. And, of course, Austin eventually coming back in the ambulance also did a great job of telling of Austin's character. You had Edge, who would come in and fight Droz, who was, I think, part of the LOD at that time. And I thought Edge had a great showing. He actually, I believe, he has one of the... let's see. 2, 3, 4, 6. Yeah, it's a 7. He's actually the 7th longest time in the Rumble at 11 minutes and 51 seconds. He would eventually, of course, be eliminated by Road Dogg. So I thought Edge had a really good showing. Part of, I think, the joy of the Rumble is seeing all of the entries, because I think the Rumble is a good representation of the talent at the time of the WWE. So it's... excuse me. Illuminati, we're down the rooftop! I'm just thinking about Kurgan. I think it's a good representation. It's sort of like a time capsule, in a way, of the talent roster of WWE at the time. Not that everybody on the roster is in the Rumble, but a good portion of it is. For instance, I did not know that the Blue Meanie, or Blue Dust, as he's known sometimes, was in the Rumble. I mean, I knew about Al Snow, and I knew he was part of the Job Squad. Again, this is before my time. I did not realize that the Blue Meanie was a part of WWE at this time. You had Mabel, who came in, who would eventually be eliminated by Midian, Farouk, and Bradshaw. Mabel would take a spot, and then he'd be hijacked by basically Undertaker's ministry, as I guess he is the sacrifice. Godfather, of course, because, you know, he brought the whoo train. Though he doesn't last that long, because he's eliminated by Kane. Okay, let's see. 1, 2, 3, 4... Kane eliminates four before he's finally, where the men with the pretty white coats come to take him, attempt to take him away, which he eliminates himself and goes after them. Overall, I thought it was a very entertaining Royal, because again, it was entertaining to see. You had Triple H there, you had Val Venus in there, lasted a pretty long time. You had Triple H who lasted a long time before. You know, of course, Austin eliminated a lot of people. I'd say one, two, you know. One of the most entertaining was, you know, China coming in and eliminating Mark Henry, only then to be eliminated by, you know, Austin. Of course, you had that famous line from Michael Cole, "Austin doesn't give a damn if you're a man or a woman." Like I said, just very entertaining Royal Rumble. I thought most of the wrestlers did a good job. Edge, I thought, had a good showing. Road Dogg, I thought, had a very good showing in eliminating people. I believe it was Gangrel, this thing where, you know, just takes him, like, sidestep, takes his head, and throws him over the top. Like, it made Road Dogg, I think, seem very powerful. I thought Billy Gunn had a good showing as he came in basically on one leg, hopping around. And again, the whole story of whenever Austin was in there, of everybody trying to go after Austin in a way, and like people even sometimes preventing Austin's elimination so that they could attempt to eliminate him to get the bounty. And I also like the ending. It comes down to Austin and McMahon, and he's just beating up on McMahon. Here comes The Rock, and The Rock. And I think what really sells it is Austin's face after he gets eliminated by Vince McMahon. Austin has that look like, I can't believe I fell for that. I must be the dumbest motherfucker on the planet. I cannot believe I fell for that. So, it's like, yeah, you fell for that. So, yeah. And, of course, again, the telling of that storyline, you know, and Rock and Austin find down in the alleyway as Vincent Mann has a beer in the ring. And mind you, I love Vince McMahon in this Rumble, because again, that's a hell point. If he comes back and like, well, I'm here at commentary, and I don't care who wins. I really don't care about winning the Rumble. I just want to make, basically, I just want to make sure Austin doesn't win it. You know. By the way, it was very good to hear McMahon on the commentary team again. So overall, I thought the Royal Rumble match was very good, and it had a great storytelling aspect of it. So I guess that now comes down to what are my three favorite like moments and matches. That's hard because I don't think there's very many moments that I like. The more memorable ones are, the botch table. That it's a moment I think that will live in infamy. That's definitely one. I can't remember any moments. I mean, that's the thing about, like, some of my favorite spots really aren't memorable, and I can't really remember any. There really wasn't any, like, big spots that I can just remember. In particular with, I think, Royal Rumble, it's really more about performances, and it's, you know, about storylines. So, I think at the end of the day, the table breaking under Rock in Mankind, because it's just, it's a fabulous botch that no one could have prevented. I think Gilbert's entrance and elimination of the Rumble, that's one that makes me laugh. And Blue Meanie being in the Royal Rumble. Those are my favorite three moments right there. With that, my favorite three matches, Boss Man versus Road Dogg is number three. I think it's a very good opening match. Number two is Ken Shamrock versus Billy Gunn, because again, I think it's a really, really good match, and I think it's very underrated on the card. And my number one match is, of course, the Royal Rumble, because it was just a very good match. Had a good payoff at the end, continued the story that would lead to, of course, to St. Valentine's Day Massacre, and of course to that year's WrestleMania. And, you know, again, there's a great story being told there. So my favorite match of the evening definitely is the Royal Rumble match, and I think that's the sign of a good Royal Rumble. When your favorite match of the evening is the Royal Rumble match itself, it's not always the sign of a good Rumble. As we'll see later this month, there's a particular Rumble where they have a match that just outshines. But I think it takes a lot for a match. The match has to be this absolutely spectacular thing for it to outshine the Rumble match, which we'll see with that Rumble. But the Rumble match has to be one of the top three matches of the night. If not, better yet, it has to be one of the top two matches, because, like I said, you have to have outstanding, spectacular, mind-blowing matches to surpass the Royal Rumble. So, overall, I think this is a very, very good Royal Rumble to watch. It has a lot of good history in it, a lot of good storytelling. Overall, I thought all the matches were enjoyable. The middle road matches kept the momentum going. The opening two matches got the momentum started. And the final two matches, you know, had told great stories. And, you know, this was definitely a villain winning. This was definitely, I should say, a heels pay-per-view where the heels won. And it really set things up for that year's WrestleMania. So overall, I give Royal Rumble 1989 a 4 out of 5. Very enjoyable. I highly suggest you watching it. Again, if nothing else, for the history aspect of it. So, 4 out of 5 for me. And that is it for this review of CM2's Wrestling Reviews. If you have any comments about my review of Royal Rumble 1999 or any other review I've done, remember there are several ways you can contact the show. One, you can contact the show through email at absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. That's absolutionnetwork132@gmail.com. You can also contact the show through Stitcher. I still have to get started on that. I apologize. I'm going to get started on that, I promise. You can contact through Stitcher by going to Stitcher, www.stitcher.com. and searching for the Absolution Network. And you can also find us on Facebook by the same way, by going to www.facebook and searching for the Absolution Network page. Like us on Facebook and leave us a comment there. And you can always leave a comment on the website itself that you can find at www.an.132productions.com. You can also leave a comment you can leave a comment on the website. But also make sure you check out all the other 132 Productions content that you can find on the site. That, of course, includes my Tom's Prerogative, my Tom's Top 10, and the Intergalactic Graphic Review Podcast, Shin Tiger Curls, wrestling and anime videos, of course, John Romans's, Toku videos, which includes the Toku Apocalypse, many other stuff right here on the Absolution Network, and of course my other podcasting sites, which of course includes Comic Book Crazy, which features Comic Book Crazy, Hexcast, and Spectacular Webs. You can find that at www.comicbookcrazy.132productions.com. And of course my Tokyo SOS, a Godzilla podcast, that you can find at www.tokyosos.132productions.com. And make sure on any of the sites you check out all our friends on the sideboard. That, of course, includes Matty J and TWK and the WrestleCast on RVTEntertainment.com. Michael Bailey and Views from Longbox, along with From Crisis to Crisis that he does with Jeffrey Taylor. Spidey Dude and the Clone Sucker Chronicles. Steven Schleicher and the Major Swoogers Podcast. And, of course, Scott Gardner and Tutu Freaks Podcasting Network. That's it for the show. One thing I have to apologize if I seemed a little, like my mind's wandering. I don't know if you can hear. I don't know if the podcast will catch it, but there are other people in the house and they're talking loudly, even though they're upstairs. So if you can hear that throughout this recording, I apologize for that. I find it funny. They always knock me for playing my music too loud and everything. But heaven forbid it go both ways. Because, so I apologize if that got distracting. It certainly was distracting to me. So anyways, that's it for this review of CMG's Wrestling Reviews. On the next episode, we're going to have some special guests. We're going to be joined by Maddie J and TWK of the WrestleCast. As we review one of the best Royal Rumbles of all time, I'm of course talking about Royal Rumble 2000. Tables, rumbles, and panties, oh my. So until next time, my wrestling fans, I want you to remember one goddamn thing about me. CMG. I'm the best Jew in the world!
You're all that I have and you're all that I need. Each and every day I pray to get to know you. Please wanna be close to you. Yes, I'm so hungry. You're like water for my soul when it gets thirsty. Without you, there's no me or the air that I breathe. Sometimes the world is dark and I just can't see. With these demons around, all around, nobody's been down to negative achieve. But I believe, yes, I believe, I said I believe. Stand on two feet, one beat, right down on one knee. I fight with all of my might and get these demons to flee. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Hashem's rays, fire blaze, burn bright in, I believe. Out of darkness comes light, twilight and to the heights. Crown lights burning up, out of to the twilight. So thank you to my God, now I finally got it right. And I fight with all of my heart and all of my soul and all of my mind. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs all I've been healing, I want Mashiach now. Time it starts a feeling. What's this feeling? My love will be falling and ceiling. I give myself to you from the essence of my being and I sing to my God. Songs all I've been healing, I want Mashiach now. Stripping away the legacy and reveal your soul. You gotta give yourself up and then you become whole. You're a slave to yourself and them don't even know. Them wanna live that fast life but your dream.